That feeling of owning your first Mercedes-Benz is hard to believe, but it's real. From the leather stitching to the iconic design, every element of a Mercedes lives up to its reputation. See for yourself at your local dealer. Offers are waiting.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Today's episode, we answered listeners' questions, but this was after a 55-minute intro. In the intro, we talk about fitness, workouts, building muscle, burning body fat. It's a good time. By the way, if you want to write in a question that we may pick, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Legion. Today, we talked about their pre-workout pulse supplement. You can get it for 20% off. Go to buylegion.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get that discount. This episode is also brought to you by Vuori. You already know who they are. They're everywhere. It's the best athleisure wear company in the world. Get 20% off. Go to vuoriclothing.com/mindpump. We also have a sale this month. MAPS 15 Performance and the RGB Bundle. 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code MAY50 for the discount. All right, back to the show. Everybody loves the perfect workout. Great pumps, great connection. You get good results. We're going to talk about how you can take six steps, just six, to create the perfect workout. Let's go.
I haven't seen what you wrote.
Just in six.
Well, first, I'll start with the first one just so people get the first tip. But then we'll talk a little bit more about the workout itself. But the most important thing you can do to get the best workout, and this is going to sound silly, but you talk to anybody who's experienced, they'll tell you, is to be very well hydrated.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
It makes a massive, massive difference.
Everything works against you if you're not.
Yes. I
mean, it's really hard to make it through.
Yes.
I would even argue, dare I say, overly hydrated. In other words, like, I found that the more water I had leading into the workout, the crazier my pumps were. Always. I remember piecing this together way later on. Like, I didn't become the guy who carried the gallon of water around until I got into competing. Up before that, who gave a shit? Like, I didn't care, right? Yeah. It wasn't part of the game. And then, but one of the biggest insights I got from that was like, holy crap, I've taken every pump supplement that's ever been made, and nothing has given me pumps like being hydrated by eating a good meal, you know, a couple hours before that's loaded with carbs, and then drinking a half a gallon of water before I get into my workout, and then while I work out.
100%.
Unbelievable pumps.
100%. So let's talk about, first off, why we want that perfect workout. Well, first off, it feels great, right? If you work out regularly, especially strength training, it's just, it's a great feeling to have that workout that just, everything feels amazing and perfect. The pumps, that's a big part of it. I think one of the reasons why we love chasing the pump, aside from the fact that it may indicate better results, maybe, is just it feels great. You can see the muscles you're targeting and what they would look like if they're actually more developed in real time. The perfect workout, you tend to be strong. There's nothing like workouts for me where I go in and I feel like I can lift whatever I want. Like, yeah, that feeling.
That's the best.
Oh, just that strength, the energy, the connection. I can feel the muscles I'm targeting. Feels like I'm progressing as I work out. No pain. I feel great.
Yeah,
like,
no pain's a big one, which also relates to the hydration, because a lot of times you'll feel that in your joints, and it's like, you know, if I'm not properly hydrated, there's a lot more times where I'll feel like my joints are talking to me, and I'm like, oh no, it's inhibiting, you know, the kind of performance I can have.
By the way, this is such a big deal, having that workout that feels good. It's such a big deal that one of the reasons why fitness fanatics overdo workouts or work out too much is they like the way it feels. They just like working out. And you can create the environment where you get that great feeling. Now, the hydrated part is very important. Now, first off, add some electrolytes or sodium to your water when you do this. You can actually drink too much water, not have enough sodium, cramp up in the workout, actually cause yourself to get a little dehydrated.
Stay in the cells. Yeah.
So what I do, so Adam, I work out first thing in the morning. So it's like I have all this time to get super hydrated. But what I do is I'll have 1,000 milligrams of sodium, our partner Element. I'll pour it in and I'll drink about a little over a quarter gallon, almost half a gallon of water. Mm-hmm. And I'll do that leading into the workout, and then during the workout, have more water.
Yep.
There's nothing that gives me
nothing
a better pump and less pain like that.
Yeah.
100%.
It's funny you're bringing this up because I just had this conversation with Everett. He just started track and field and has been practicing and ramping up his intensity. And like, he came home and he was just super exhausted, just wanted to go to sleep. He's like, got a headache. And he's like, oh man, Dad, I went too hard and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, did you drink water all day leading up to, he like didn't drink any water.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. And just to get him on this realization that a lot of this could have been resolved from that, you'd feel a lot better and you'd perform better.
70% of your muscles are fluid. So the majority of your muscle size and volume is fluid. You need electrolytes and water for cells to communicate properly, for your central nervous system to function properly. Muscles are far less likely to be pulled or strained when you're well hydrated. You're far less likely to injure yourself. The data on that's very clear, by the way. Yep. Like a dehydrated athlete, the odds that they'll hurt themselves is actually significantly higher. So, and it sounds silly because it's water, but it's actually the most impactful things you could do.
One of the side effects too is like fatigue, like low energy when you're dehydrated like that too. Sometimes like, and this happens to me many times where I was like, the days kind of got away from me and I'm feeling kind of sluggish and I'm like, I have had like no water today. And then I'll go pound a bunch of water. I'm like, oh my God, I feel so much better. So I remember actually hearing Justin suggest that to a client and I thought, man, I don't think I've ever checked that box when a client tells me they're fatigued. And after that, I remember talking to clients and many times it was, we're in the, you know, have some coffee, energy drink or go straight into like sodas and then you just, the day gets by and you're like, oh yeah, I drink. But then you go,
unless you're intentional about it, you won't even think.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And by the way, there's a difference. Like some people argue and say, well, you don't need that much water to not be dehydrated. There's water that's essential or fluid intake that's essential. And then there's optimal and they're different. Okay. So you can have just like protein, you can have essential protein and then there's optimal protein for hitting your goals. The same thing is true for water. So it is true that your thirst is, or your desire to drink water or fluid is a good indicator that will prevent you from being dehydrated. That's true. So people will say that, well, your thirst will tell you when you need water. Yeah, that's true. But optimal is higher than that. Optimal is more than that if you're looking for, you know, the best results and for a great workout. Next up is to have a really good night of sleep the day before. Mm-hmm. If you want to go into a workout and perform at a high level, either you're going to go after a PR, you're going to work out with your friend, you know you're going to get after it.
Yeah.
Make sure the night before you get like a good 30 minutes to an hour more sleep than you normally would. This makes a huge difference. And on the flip side, a poor night of sleep is, I think the injury risk alone with a poor night of sleep is something like twice as high. It's significant. So going into the workout, be very well rested. Have a good night of sleep.
Yeah, this is probably one of the ones that's overlooked the most. I mean, I think that we're constantly, I think, pounding the message of sleep, 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 because so many things happen. And I think that we tend to neglect that. Or a lot of times what will happen is somebody is feeling sluggish and then they get in the workout and they feel so much better than they push past that. But if I'm going to go into a workout that I'm trying to get, this is like very, like in with intention of this is going to be a hard workout, this should be arguably the first one, right? Yeah. This is like, because you're prepping, this is the day before, right? Water, I can make up the first thing in the day. Oh, I can get some water in. But this is like, I have to think about this the day before. Hey, I'm getting after these lifts. Therefore, I need to make sure I do this tonight to make sure I get a good night.
By the way, all the stuff we're talking about, you think to yourself like, well, when would I use this? Well, number one, if you just want to have that workout, that's awesome. And number two, this is great for the air when you're training body parts or areas that are weak or that are lagging. So you see really smart bodybuilders they'll do all these steps for that day because they know they're lagging in their back or their legs or something like that. So that's what you can use this for. Next up, take the previous day off. A day off leading into the workout will pretty much guarantee you're going to feel more rested, stronger, more connected, better pumps, more recovered for sure. This was this for me was whenever I was going to work out with a friend, which I rarely ever do, but if I was and I knew I kind of wanted to get after it with my buddy, I would make sure not to work out the day before so I could go into it fresh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been considering this a lot, especially like trying to time out and figure out when I'm really going to load heavier or not quite as heavy for this whole series I'm doing for overhead pressing. And so it's been a lot of strategic one, 2 days of not lifting prior to that, you know, the big, I'm kind of finding my sweet spot.
Yeah. I would argue
difference.
I would argue at least 1 day or maybe even two, depending on how hard your training has been going and consist with that. Cause, I feel the same way too. You start stretching it beyond 4 days or longer, then I feel like sluggish or reverse effect. But if I'm consistently training a good day or two off going into getting ready for a serious workout like that, it tends to always serve me.
Yeah, and this is why a lot of people notice if they're consistent with everything and they work, let's say, Monday through Friday workouts, their Monday workouts tend to be the best. It's because they're coming off the weekend, they're rested.
They're fresh.
They're fresh, and they just have a great workout on Monday. Next up, and you said this earlier, Adam, have carbs and protein about 2 or 3 hours before the workout. Now, the data on this with performance is very clear, but I also noticed this with the pump. This is a big one with the pump. For me, huge. I work out first thing in the morning, so I'm fasted, but if I can work out in the afternoon and have like one or two meals before I do the workout, I know it's going to feel, it's, no matter what, it just feels so much better and so much stronger, so much more energy. The pump is just unreal.
There's everybody has a number. In my experience of advising people with this, and it's good, there's a huge range. Somebody who's low carb, doesn't eat a lot of carbs, I can load them up with 20 or 30 grams of carbs pre-workout and they're going to notice a huge difference. If you eat a lot of carbs, that person might need 150 grams of carbs, but everybody has a number. There's a number of grams of carbohydrates that if you prioritize intake well before your workout, so 2 hours or more before the workout, you will notice this and you'll have a number that if you eat less than that, the pumps are less. If you eat any more than that, they're not any better. There's a number. Yeah. And it's like,
you're right. For me, it was around 50.
Yeah. And I was about 75. So like, I knew that if I had 75 grams or more of carbohydrates, I'm going to have the best. And the water, the combination. And
when you were competing, this was just a regular for you, right?
Yes. Oh yeah. Like it, you talk about, you know, again, this was my job in a sense, right? I wasn't getting paid, but I was treating it like a job. So all these things that you're talking about, you know, I was always thinking about. I was the day before, I was thinking about the next day's workout. If it was going to be a hard, heavy day, I'm knowing that I got to get good night's rest. I know I'm gonna be lifting by noon or so. So I need to get at least two meals in before, like all these things that you're talking about. And I think this is it's actually kind of cool to talk about this because when you optimize all these things that you're talking about, boy, the workouts, the gains, they come on. And this is what a lot of people who don't know what's happening behind the scenes, other than what they see on social media, don't realize about some of these incredible physiques that you see is like these guys and girls are
they're doing all this stuff.
They're doing this every day,
like consistent diet,
every day, every day they're doing this. I mean, I did at least. That's what it took for me to look like that consistently. Was I was thinking about all these things every day, all the time, and realized that when I checked all these boxes, I was making great workouts. I was making great progress. If I lacked in one or two of them, I was having setbacks. Mm-hmm. And so the pros or the people that do this for a living, whether that be for Instagram living or for competing reasons, they do all this stuff.
That's right. Next up, prime well, individualize your warm up. So if you notice shoulder pain when on chest day and you have identified that if you work on shoulder mobility before the workout, if you work on scapular retraction, like with some rows before you go bench press, or let's say you have issues with your squat, so you know ankle mobility is important or hip strengthening mobility, you know, some people tube walking is what really helps them get into a good squat. Like spending a good 10 to 15 minutes of proper priming makes a dramatic difference in your workout. This one's so important. I did this with my clients almost every time. Like when my clients were well balanced, then our warmups look more like a set or two of the exercise with light weight moving into it. But almost, I mean, every client I had, at least for the first 6 months, like we primed individually and it dramatically improved their success with their workouts and made them more connected to the lift, less pain. They felt great. In fact, this was like a trainer hack for me to convince people my value. I would do a priming session with them, have them do a lift, and they're like, oh my God, I don't have any more pain. I feel great.
Yeah, the more consistent you are in the very beginning with that, the less cueing was necessary once they got into those major lifts and everything was responsive. And yeah, like you said, there'd be like one warm-up set and then you're pretty much ready to go.
I mean, again, getting back to the people that do this at the professional level, like this part is so serious. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I had plenty of time, so I would get to the gym and spend a lot of time doing this, getting my body all primed, ready, knowing what lifts I'm going to go do, knowing all the imbalances and the things I need to do, spending all that time to do that so that when I get into those working sets, I'm getting the most I possibly can out of that for sure.
Now, lastly, we'll get to the pre-workout supplements. That's what everybody's looking for. I'm only going to list the ones that are pretty consistently backed by data. So there's lots of ingredients and compounds that people we could speculate might help. And I could tell you some that I personally find that are good for me. Other people might not, notice so much. But the ones we're going to list here are the ones that the data show pretty clearly have a performance benefit or a positive effect on a workout. So the first thing is caffeine. Caffeine is the number one ingredient in every pre-workout for a reason. It is a drug. It is a stimulant. Yeah. It will ramp up the CNS a little bit, and it will improve your performance. I don't think I need to argue that. Everybody knows what caffeine does. Theanine is the next one. This is an amino acid that, when combined with caffeine, actually enhances the effects of caffeine. Now, what it does is it doesn't make the caffeine stronger. It makes it feel more focused and cleaner, no jitters, and it kind of lasts longer.
It also kind of mitigates the crash.
Yes.
That's what I always
thought. It's a smoother feel.
Yeah.
It makes it feel better is what it does. And this, again, this is all backed by data. Next up is citrulline. Citrulline does seem to increase the performance in the workout and some blood flow. That's the pump supplement that everybody points to. The next one's beta-alanine. Now, beta-alanine has been shown in the data to improve stamina. Some people don't like the way it makes them feel, get the tingles in their face. I personally love it. I love getting that feeling. Makes me feel like I took something else, you know, that's working.
Yeah. Okay.
And then lastly is betaine. Betaine has been shown in the data to improve performance in the workout. So that would be your pre-workout stack that you would take.
So I'm going to add little twist to two things. One, addressing the caffeine conversation. One, if you're listening and you're already someone who does this, the value of coming off of caffeine for a while and then coming back on is like massive. So if you're already somebody who consistently and you never take a break from it, taking a break, going through that misery for however long it takes to kind of wean off of it.
Yeah.
But and then reintroduce it, it's like, you know, I don't want to say it's like steroids, but it's like
you get the magic again.
Yeah, you do.
It's the honeymoon phase all over.
Exactly. You really get to feel the benefits of what that feels like. Right now, for some people, it's like they just do it. They have to do it just to have a normal workout they feel like. And if you're at that point, I can't suggest strongly enough that you come off for a while, then reintroduce it and watch what happens.
Now I have a study on caffeine. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But there, one of our partners actually put together a pre-workout that has all the ingredients I talked about, which is Legion. Legion's Pulse. One thing about Mike, love him or hate him, we love him, is he only does what the data shows clearly.
Yeah.
He does not add or anything that he speculates or this person said that or whatever, this exotic, anything. It's like, does the data show it? Yes. What's the efficacious dose? Oh, it's that much. That's what's going in. Nothing else. And he did that with Pulse, which is, I think, by the way, Pulse is like one of the top selling pre-workouts out there.
One of his best products.
Because of it. And he has all the efficacious dose. It's got a really healthy, it's got a really big dose of caffeine, 350 milligrams for a full dose.
Now, honorable mention. Cold plunge before.
Good call.
Yeah. Honorable mention. If you have the resources or access to that, a good cold plunge before this workout.
You could do cold shower, but
you could do that. If that's, but if you can get in a nice little 3-minute cold plunge before you go into, and you'd follow all these steps you're talking about, that combined with all this, like look out, that's going to be a good lift.
That's good. All right. Yeah. You brought up caffeine. They actually did a study on how long you need to be off caffeine before it's not just out of your system, but receptors are back to normal.
Let's take a guess.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? How long do you have to be off caffeine for you to be new to caffeine again, to be a caffeine virgin all over again?
Oh, man. I say just like a week.
So 7 days?
That's a good guess. I was going to say 7. So I'll say shorter because I think it's 7 or less. I think you can be off for like 3 to 5 days.
What do you think, Doug? Well, you're the closest, 11 days.
Oh, it's 11 days.
We actually found it takes about 11 days for the average person.
I know it's pretty short, though.
It is.
Because I've had some short bouts.
I mean, you just take a couple days off.
Yeah.
You just take a couple days off.
Do you know what that research says about cannabis? Because I know cannabis is low like that, too.
Cannabis is longer because it's fat-soluble.
It stays in your system for longer. But I actually think the effects of it, you get, again, really quick.
I'm not sure.
I mean, I could be wrong. Right, but yeah. I think cannabis is pretty quick too.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But caffeine, 11 days, that's the good news. The bad news is caffeine withdrawal sucks.
It does.
It's really nasty, it's especially the first 3 days.
I think that's really to each person. It really is.
Depends on how high you are, too, yeah. I'm sure.
I mean, like, I'm pretty
dependent high on you are.
Yeah, but what do you do with the 3 days when you're off? Are you just at home chilling? Or you're not coming to work trying to do things?
Yeah, yeah. There's been many times in this podcast you guys had no idea I've been off caffeine for a while.
We knew. We talked about when you left.
Yeah, we were aware.
He's off something. Adam's off something. I can tell. I went off for a little while, and those first four days.
I mean, it's a drug, right? And I my experience with alcohol, harder drugs, and caffeine as a drug, I really noticed that there's a genetic component of like certain people, like weed, alcohol, caffeine doesn't bother me. Opiates, things like that. Oh my God, my body has hard withdrawal.
It's interesting to me because I can go like 2, maybe 3 days like without really noticing anything, and then after that, it's like, oh, it's the headache. It's the, you know, I definitely get the like shaky.
You get the withdrawal afterwards. Yeah.
But the first, like if I miss like a day or two, like it's not
a big deal. Thing.
Yeah.
No, it sucked, man. I hated it. I hated life. I actually felt depressed. It's really bad.
I feel you, dude.
So cannabis, 4 weeks for receptor function to return.
Interesting. Yeah.
However, I'll tell you this. The brain changes take much longer. They're doing brain imaging on people who use cannabis regularly. And when they go off, the brain effects last a lot longer.
I wonder why then, like, there's plenty of times where I have these little 3-4 day bouts where I don't have any. And then the first time back after, I'm like,
well, changes are happening. So I'm sure receptors are upregulating that, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it takes a full 4 weeks for it to go completely back to. In fact, the withdrawal from cannabis doesn't kick in typically for a week or 2 weeks sometimes because it's fat soluble. Did you guys know that, by the way, that this has actually happened to some people where they would use a lot of cannabis, they're kind of overweight, and then they quit. And then they, you know, 4 or 5 months later, they lose a bunch of weight and they'll test positive for THC.
Oh. It stays in their fat.
Yes,
yeah.
It's fat soluble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've even read anecdotally, I don't know how true this is, but I've read anecdotally that people who used to smoke a lot of cannabis quit, months later lose weight, get high from losing the weight. Like, whoa, I feel like I just had an edible. Because it gets released.
Legit.
I've heard anecdotes about it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's because it's a fat soluble compound.
Oh, that's funny.
Speaking of which, I had this thought this morning about, you know, and the people in the health space sometimes struggle with this. So I do think it's a good conversation where you get people in the health space that are really fanatical, not orthorexic, but they're getting there where, you know, everything has to be healthy. Everything has to be perfectly healthy. And what I think that they're missing, actually I had this conversation with someone at the gym this morning. What I think they're missing is that quality of life also has been shown to improve longevity, but we also can't just discount quality of life. You know, like an example would be pizza, unhealthy. I don't think anybody would label pizza to be a healthy food, okay? But if I'm eating pizza with my friends who I haven't seen in a while and we're enjoying each other's company and we're having a laugh and we're having a couple beers. Physiologically, I could, you know, obviously not healthy, but is it healthy for me? I would argue yes. I would argue it would be a net positive because of the improvement in quality of life. You know,
how does someone? It's got to be really tough for the average person to decipher between.
You fool yourself,
of course, because you hear Sal say that on Mind Pump, and I'm like, well, this is, you know, this is good for me because I'm with my brother. You know what I'm saying?
He's like, gonna go recruit people.
Yeah, like,
hey, man, we're being healthy.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it is an interesting thought experiment.
It is right? Because I know that. And, I mean, I'll be this. It'll be the first. Yeah. What did I do the other day? Oh my God, it was so funny. It was like. Taking ice cream from one house the other day, the amount of seriousness and prep I did because I didn't want my ice cream to melt. I thought this is a problem.
You just buy more ice cream.
Yes, bro. It's just like that I actually took this much effort to keep from one house to the other house.
Dry ice.
Yes, bro. I'm just like, over like a little thing of ice cream. I'm just like, I mean, there's a problem there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was very aware of it as I caught myself doing it.
What
like,
was the deal with you with ice cream? Was it specifically ice cream or was it just sweets in general? Because you said when you were a kid.
Sweets in general.
Because you had to eat them all, otherwise everybody
else would. And ice cream was really special because, you know, if we could afford to have it, it would just be, you know, it's those little carts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, or whatever. What is like how much? What is that? What's in the square?
A quart and a half
or half.
Maybe a half gallon. Is it?
Two quarts? Yeah, something like that. It's more like
two quarts is half gallon.
Look up what a thrifty thing of ice cream is. Whatever that is. But for a family of six, that's not a lot.
No.
You know what I'm saying? There might be six scoops total in there. And like, I'm a three scoop ice cream guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a one scoop guy.
We'd have to get it from my daddy.
So you had to like, you know, you had to fight for it to get it. You know what I'm saying? Or you got it one time and then you didn't get it again. And I remember when I was 17 and I moved out that I just had ice cream in the freezer. I can eat it right out of the thing too. That was another rule in our family. You couldn't do that. Like you scoop it in the bowl and it's what you get.
It is a big family thing. Cause you're making me, you know, memories come back. It's like my dad would buy, he would try to find ice cream that we wouldn't eat, but we would like, so he would buy like Neapolitan. It was like the mix of vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Someone would eat strawberry. Everybody would eat strawberry, just strawberry.
Like one block would be missing. My dad gets so mad. I just have vanilla now. What the
But I mean, you're right. And if we got a thing of Oreos or whatever treat that we would get when my mom would grocery shop like once every 2 weeks and we would buy in bulk, right? And there would always be like one thing of cookies, one thing of
ice. Once it's gone, that's it.
Yeah, once it's gone, that's it. You don't get to potentially see it. And that was a treat too. So it wasn't like every grocery shop she got that. It was like, you know, maybe with the first of the month when she got a check or something like that, we got to see something like that.
What are the sizes there?
So I think you have the 1.5 quart size.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a 1.5 quart. So it's not a lot of ice cream.
Well, it's almost a half gallon.
For a family of six, that goes pretty fast and you're not allowed to eat out of it. So it caused it all these. Anyways, the whole point of me bringing that up is that
that was a quality of life.
I could totally catch myself. So we just had Tina's 75th birthday at my house, and they had all this cake, you know, and we had a ton left over, and everybody knows that. Like cake. So I come walking down the stairs, and
I forgot you like cake.
And Katrina is arguing with Jerry and Tina and someone else. No, just that. And they're like, well, let's ask Adam. And so I come in and they're like, and we made these giant cakes, two of them like this, right? And we had a quarter of the people that we thought would be there. And so like, there's a full, and she's got this mound, you know, and then there's this little Tupperware of like pieces. And Katrina's like, this is what he gets. You know? And they're like, Adam, what do you want? This or that? And I'm like, oh, you know, and there's a part of me that's pulled to like, give me the big thing.
The Mondo.
Yeah, cake. Give me the big old thing that's like a.
Cake is weird. It's one of those things that if it's not a birthday or a celebration and you're buying cake to eat it, there probably is a problem.
It's like sad.
Yeah.
Bro, why are you just eating cake? Didn't I tell you what happened last time we had boys weekend? This is so bad. So bad I did this. So, and again, here we go.
Just you and your son?
Justifying. Oh, it's boys weekend. But I bought a whole Paris baguette cake for Max and I for the weekend.
That wasn't for you, bro.
Yeah, I know. I gave him a little sliver.
Too much for you.
Yeah, one sliver for him, and I ate the rest of the cake myself, you know?
He's like, ooh, too sweet, though.
So, you know, so this is what I mean is like, there's just like, oh, this is a bonding time. Yeah. My son and I, we're having, you know, he doesn't ever get to really do this. Yeah. But like deep down, I'm closing myself on that when in reality, I'm feeding an addiction.
That's the only time I go look. I never go buy sweets with the kids. Because it drives me crazy. But if Courtney's gone, I'm taking them, and we're going to get cookies.
Yeah,
that's just our thing, dude.
Yeah.
Well, your kids are a little older now, Justin. But I've been running into this with my little ones. If I give them a treat, or if I get them a toy, all it does, they're happy, and then they want more, and then they cry. I'm like, I should have never given you this in the first place.
Yeah.
I'll give like my daughter, I give her six jelly beans, right? Here, have some jelly beans. She's so excited. She dances. My daughter will dance. And then she'll eat them all. She'll be like, more? And I'll be like, no more, honey. Ah!
I have
what did I do? I should have given you another.
I have a theory on that because Max is not like that. He's got such a good relationship with it because of course I was so worried about my own, right? So I probably overcompensated a little bit by saying no for so long. But I think because he was told no for so long, he's so grateful to get a bite of something. I kid you not,
Father, please. Thank you, Father.
I kid you not. I could literally, he could ask for something, and then if I give
that's the secret. I need to give my kids nothing.
That's what I mean. I think I waited so long that finally when dad gave it to him, it was like, hey, I'll give you, you can have a bite. You know what I'm saying? And then it was like, a bite was all you got. And so he's just so appreciative of getting any of it. And I also think it conditioned his palate so much that it's too much for him if he has a bunch of it. So he's also got to a point where he's just like, he'll pass something up. There's been times I've given him a full cupcake and he's just like, he eats half of it and leaves it.
That was my dad's argument when we were growing up. He would always tell us that when he was a kid, you know what my toys were? He used to love telling us. You know what I used to play with?
Sticks.
A stick and a tire. I used to have a tire, and that's what I played with all the time. It was my favorite toy. I'm like, what are you talking about? A tire? Who plays with a tire? He did. He played the tire.
Oh, dude,
that was his favorite toy.
It's so hard. I get it as parents because they're you know, you love to see the kids light up and you want them to enjoy it, all these things like that. But then you create a monster. You do. You really, and then it's hard to back it out.
You know, it's another mistake that I've made now a few times that I'm not going to do anymore. Is I think it's going to be fun. We go on a walk, and where I live, there's this really cool toy store that's got like really cool toys, like learning toys and like toys you don't typically find at a toy store. So I'll walk over there and I'll tell my son, "You get to pick out a toy." Mm-hmm. Mistake, because it's too many choices.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what to get. I don't know what to get. And I'm there forever. And I just make a choice for him. You're getting this, you know?
And then he's unhappy about it.
Yeah, dude, he gets all, it's too much, you know? Yeah. It's like trying to find something to watch on TV these days. You know what I mean? You're searching for hours or whatever.
It's so true.
I know. It's so annoying. Speaking of fitness and stuff, are you guys, so I just got, who sent this to me? One of our, that's who it was. I think it was Margaret when I was on their call last night with our staff. There's a hashtag and this like this movement that's happening on social media. They're calling it skinny talk.
Skinny talk?
Skinny and then talk, like TikTok. So it's a hashtag and it's all these, and they call it like tough love. But I went through and started looking at what they're saying and it's not good. It's not like healthy.
Shaming people?
No, it's not. It's like if your stomach is grumbling, pretend like your stomach's applauding you or something like that.
What?
Yeah, dude. And it's like tough love. What? Like, you know, oh, if you're hungry, that's a good thing. And don't give in. It's like this group of mostly women who are shaming each other into getting really skinny.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Dude. Young or older? Or what's the age you look like?
It's I haven't done a ton of looking. But
it's TikTok, so I imagine young.
It seems like mostly younger, you know, 20-something-year-old, whatever, you know, fitness people.
And it's just about getting skinny. It's not about like any kind of exercise or anything.
It's about losing weight. It's about losing weight, not eating, eating less. Don't eat too much.
Yeah, it's not a good
thing. Like one of the popular.
It's what's so dangerous about the internet is that there's enough sadistic people that like that and want that for that to get traction.
Well,
it also ends up capturing a lot of people that are on the fence or shouldn't be and so that, but there's enough, like that doesn't get traction if a majority of people are like, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But there's enough people that are like, I needed to hear that.
Well, a part of it, we see this in the fitness space, right? The most ripped, jacked people are the most likely to have really bad body image issues and have a poor relationship to food, you know, body dysmorphia. They're the most likely. Part of the reason why they look the way they do is because they're completely obsessed and they have no relationships. They have no life. All they do is focus on how they look. But because they look the way they do, they post on social media and they get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So everybody is getting information from psychos.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting information not from healthy people.
Obsessive psychics.
Right. So what they're communicating is what they think is good information. Like being hungry is a good thing, you know, whatever. Or, you know, weakness, pain is weakness leaving the body and go beast mode, whatever. And so the average person sees this like, oh, this is the fitness guy. He knows what he's talking about. No. He's unhealthy. Don't listen to that guy.
I mean, let's be honest. The fitness space is...
I feel like it's going to ramp up even more.
Well, we've glorified body dysmorphia for a long time. I mean, all of us have some form of it. I mean, if really the goal, okay, what our industry didn't exist 50 years ago because it wasn't necessary.
Mm.
Nobody was fat. Nobody was eating too much, right? We didn't have all this stuff. Then that happens and it's like, oh shit, we need to do this. Okay, here comes the fitness industry to save the day, to get us healthier. And then healthy ends up pendulum swings so far that it becomes healthy is this jacked look. And it's like, and then we professionals that are jacked looking, we talk about, oh, it's all about being healthy. But no, it's actually like a form of body dysmorphia, because you didn't need to go that far to be healthy. Yeah. You went way past it.
You're past healthy.
Yeah, you're way past it. Yeah. Like it was 4%, 5%, 7% ago was healthy. And you kept going for your own body dysmorphia issues. Mm-hmm. And so, and then we've even convinced the consumer that if you don't look that way, then I would never hire you, because I don't want someone who doesn't live that brand or doesn't know how to discipline themselves. And it's like, we've completely distorted what health looks like.
Yeah, we're right back to it, just because, I mean, we get it through the body positivity side of things, you know, on the other end of the pendulum. And then, you know, all the mannequins now are like obese and, you know, and it, this is like the new standard of health. And
I know, like, you're right. It's like this.
And now we're just like, just slide right back into the old shaming stuff. It's like, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, poor health is common.
That's really what this is, Justin, is to what your Sal's highlighting right now. It's just an overcorrection from that.
It's all bad health. It's all poor health.
Yeah. It's all about balance, dude. Like, it's always been the case. Yeah. Like, people, like, innately, they know that. It's I don't know why it's so compelling. You know,
it's tough, man. Yeah. The data on especially girls, young girls, teenage girls, they should not be on social media. They should not be on social media. The connection between anxiety, body dysmorphia, eating disorders with girls and how long they're on social media and what they look at is ridiculous. It's insane. And if you look at the things that are geared towards these girls, I mean, it's terrible. It's not good.
No. I mean, you're talking about that. Like, you guys, I know you haven't seen that show yet, but that show goes deep on that.
I'm almost afraid to watch it, because I'm probably
depressed. I've watched part of it, yeah.
I mean, we all should, just because I just think it's an important, I mean, it's important for us to continue to communicate this message to all the other parents that are out there right now that may be on the fence of letting their kids get on these platforms or not. And it's just, there's not a lot of positive things that you can say, can convince me now of like why you would get them on that platform. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. I don't see what positively comes out. I get that they would try and make this case of like, oh, well, you know, they meet with their friends. The kids will find a way to talk to their friends. Mm. Yeah. Kids will find a way to do all that shit. They don't need to be on Instagram or TikTok or Snapchat in order to do that. And what you don't see is all the stuff that they're doing. And their brains just aren't formed yet, where they even realize, like, well, that's the thing I got from this watching this show, is just like, a lot of these little girls are just, they're so young and naive. They're getting positive reinforcement, which is addicting to adults. I mean, everyone in here knows what it's like to post something on Instagram and then check back to see if you got likes or not. Okay. Mm-hmm. If we have felt our own pull to check that, what do you think a 13-year-old
kids are wired for that?
Wired. Oh, and so, and then they're not going like, is this morally right? It's just like more of that. Oh, more or whatever.
I get more.
Yeah, more of that. I gotta do more of that. And it's like, there's a part of them that's actually very innocent about it, that just is just getting this positive reinforcement. And so they think it's okay. Mm-hmm. And then if we have parents that aren't paying attention to it, then it runs wild, man. And that's like, how do you put the toothpaste back in after you've let it out like that, too?
Yeah, it's like I have a 15-year-old, and we limit, and I monitor it because I have to monitor it, because if I don't monitor it and the limits somehow get turned off or some update happens, she won't say anything. She'll just keep staying on there. And so we've limited her to like 15 minutes on social media platforms. And part of the reason why it's limited and not completely gone is there's a part of me that's like, because I had a friend whose parents were so strict with certain things that when he got out of the house, he went crazy in the opposite direction. Yep. So that's the tough thing.
I mean, I told you guys, again, I'm so far from this, so I could be so way off base. Maybe I fail at it and I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I'm convinced that and this is why I think your situation, both of you, because you've already, the cat's out of the bag, right? It's hard. It's harder now. But because he's still so young, I have this opportunity that when that comes knocking at the door and he really wants to do that, he's going to have to read those books and he's going to have to be able to report to me what he learned from those books. That's your first to get you even the possibility to use it is that. So that already is going to create a barrier because when he's a certain age, he's gonna be too lazy to even do that. And that's fine. You're too lazy to do that. You can't have social media. Once you're ready for it, it's after you read that. Then after he reads that and he can explain that to me, then you'll have an understanding from a brilliant author who sold millions of books and multiple books, not just one, that are telling them the dangers of this. And then he understands why dad says, hey, you can only use this in the living room. You can only do this for this long. And then we can talk about how you're going to be able to manage.
You know what I'll say is just from experience is the most important thing is aligning with parents who have similar values.
Sure.
So that their friends are like they are. Otherwise, it gets real. It's like my friends are doing this, older, and I can't.
The friends take a lot of influence.
Yes, dude.
And
yes.
So, yeah, and this is to like the earlier point of when we were like having to decide whether or not this environment was a good fit, you know, if this friend group was, and I went in and hijacked and pulled them out because I was like, no. This isn't going in a direction I like, and so we're gonna shake it up. There's gonna be pain points because it's like they like hanging out with those people, like, you know, there's gonna be fights involved, but it was the best decision because now it's like you do kind of have to lead and place in front of them better opportunities for that, better kids that are like handling it better. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not gonna have a lot of control over that. Obviously, as they get into high school and like,
of course,
you know, all of that, it's like you're pretty much what you've established is what you've established. So yeah, in the beginning and like getting involved like that, I think super that's everything important. You can do. You can't do more than that.
I mean, I think you're so right, and I think that's the biggest takeaway or what I take away from it is just being aware and involved in it. Because like, and I shared with you guys the recent finding that I had of like one of Max's friends that his parents don't let him use iPad. And it's like, I encourage that friendship like crazy.
Yes.
Because I know how the parents are with the iPad.
Yeah. Then he's isolated. He's not my friend to keep it either.
Yeah, invite him over more. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like, that's become his best friend. And he's at an age where I can kind of control that. You know what I'm saying? And Katrina's fostered relationship with the mother. And so they see each other, they're best of friends now. And so it's like, I'm going to try and involve myself as much as I can and be aware of those things, those friendships, and do my best as a parent of fostering those until I can't. Because you're right, at some point he gets his license, he's in high school, and he's going to hang out with whoever he wants. But I think if you've done that for 10, 12, 13 years, 14 years of their life, you've probably laid a pretty solid foundation that you still have that to lean on. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect or I guarantee it's going to work, but it gives you a fighting chance, I feel like, versus just being like whatever, laissez-faire about it or not paying attention whatsoever or even caring what the kids that he's hanging around with right now or how the parents parent
them. The best moments for me are when they come to you and admit that they have this like pull to it. And they have an addiction and they don't dad, this is, you know, this is something that like, I'm struggling with this. And I'm like, oh wow. You know? And then, you know, we've had that conversation a few times. And so it's a lot of involvement that you really have to like peer into that. Cause too, we know how much of a thing it is just with us personally and like how hard it is for me.
And we didn't grow up with it.
I can justify it so many different ways and they feel the same way. Yeah. It's like everything that they're involved in is important. Their whole friend group is important, just as important as work is for us, you know? And it's like, and they're missing out on this party or they're this or that or the other. And so, you know, I have to be the bad guy a lot of times, but you know, we talk our way through that. And then, you know, some of them I'll compromise.
So. But that's to me, that's everything right there. Right. And that's why my theory is if I make him read those books and he's aware of it, not coming from dad, but aware from it, from somebody else. Right.
He knows what your intention with it.
And then he's likely if like, let's say that he, like, again, I still am allowing him some sort of freedom. That when he starts and he's like, oh shit, I'm starting to do some of the things that book said. And then maybe he'll come to me.
He's aware. Like,
yeah, he's aware. Where the average kid is just unaware. Yeah. They look at their peers and it's normal for them all to sit at a table together and all of them be like this and none of them talking to each other. Like that's just like.
It still drives me crazy.
Oblivious.
Some days I want to just blow it up.
Like, bro. Because I'm like, if you do that, at least I feel like my kid will, because I can't stop him from at lunchtime or at school one time sitting at a table like that, but he hopefully will be the kid who goes like, oh, wow, this is what
This is what I read about.
This is what I read about. Or this is what my dad was talking about because he's aware of it. Versus, I never have that conversation. Yeah. I just hope for the best. And it's like, no, then he's going to do whatever the dumb kid does.
You know what's interesting about this conversation is the data on what's the youngest generation that they're, what are they calling, Gen Z?
Gen Z.
Is it Gen Z
or I? Which one's?
I think it's iGen.
Yeah. So what they're the data on Gen Z is interesting. They, a lot of them are trying not to go on social media.
They're more aware.
A lot of them are trying to avoid things like pornography, trying to avoid having smartphones, which is weird because who does that? Mm-hmm. Well, this generation is doing that. There's a huge interest in religion, which is been on the decline for decades, mm-hmm. and we're seeing a reversal. And I think it may have just gotten so bad.
Yeah,
that's it. I hope that it's in the same trajectory as smoking. Like we could see, you see how that all was in every movie. It was cool. Like, you know, cool kids are what, and then everybody like it, it's so different now to see somebody smoking. Dude. And it's just like, oh God, what are you doing?
I agree. I think that we've lived before and after, and we're in this time with our kids during it, that I do think that this Gen Z generation come up when the kids will be in high school and then they're sitting around a table and there's kids that are doing that. They're going to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
We're all together. That's rude. We're all right here, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. You know, speaking of which, did you guys see American Idol, what they did? Was it like a few days ago or a week ago?
No. Uh-uh.
So you guys are familiar with American Idol, right? Seeing the competition. Generation Alpha is the younger one. Oh, the newest one's Generation Beta. Interesting. Uh-huh. So what American Idol did, which I never would have thought they would have done in a million years, they had a worship night. They had a night where most of the
mainstream TV,
most of the contenders were singing religious music, and most of it was Christian. You know who the artists were?
I'm so suspicious. I'm so suspicious. My tinfoil hat's never been on so hard, bro, lately with that
real,
stuff.
Dude, for real.
Brandon Lake,
the 180 TVs made so hard, man.
Do you know you guys know who Brandon Lake is? He's the guy that came out and opened. He's like a huge, I went to one of his concerts.
Yeah.
And they were Carrie Underwood.
That's pretty crazy.
Sang a Christian song and had all these artists. This is American Idol.
Yeah.
Of all places. Yeah. Like, what is happening?
I think it's cool.
So what do you think they're doing?
I just don't trust it. I just think
you don't think they're following consumers? I think they're trying to follow consumers. That's all.
Well, yeah, of course. But again, I don't think it's rooted in good.
No.
Like you feel good. I feel good about when we're watching it because it aligns with your values. Yeah. But is it any different than the other side? It's no different.
Yeah.
It's just this time it aligns with you.
Yeah.
So now the other side's pissed off.
Yeah, but at least
now the atheist is all mad. Like, what is this bullshit now we gotta watch?
Yeah. Atheists are already mad.
What I'm not sold on is that I'm not excited because I feel like it's not rooted in the right things. It's not like I don't think they're doing because they're trying to help society or move in a direction that's better for us. This is like we're now on this conservative kick, so now we're going to move over in this direction.
What's cool about it, though, is that so many people are emboldened and encouraged by it. So on social media, you see all these people posting like the Carrie Underwood song, and they're just like, oh my God, this is awesome. I can't believe this is on primetime.
Well, just so you know, that same feeling that you have, the woke side of the culture was saying that the last 5 years. Finally, we feel supported and emboldened, and now you're that side.
Yeah.
But the other thing,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not excited about it. You would have got me excited about it 20 years ago because I'd be naive to what's going on. But it's like, man, this 180 is too fast.
My point is, I agree. My point is, it's reflecting the consumer, which is just showing us that there is a shift.
Yeah.
There is a cultural shift that's happening right now.
I'll be convinced once I see a Disney movie that's like
they did
full on. And I heard, no, they had but a I haven't seen it yet.
They had a character
about that.
Yeah, they had a character.
Is that real? They will. There's something else I heard too about Disney that they're making a move that direction now too. I forgot what it was. I wish I remember.
Because they're the last like sort of strong. They're like holding strong like to this like ideology.
No, they're moving the other direction. I saw something too. I can't remember.
They're losing so much money.
Well, that's just it.
You gotta just.
So here's the way I look at it is. I don't look at American Idol and go, yeah, American Idol, they're good now, or yay. Yeah. I look at it like it's a reflection of culture.
Yeah.
And I think culture is.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, I'm with you because, of course, it's, they're on my team now. So I'm like positive about it, but it's like, then it's only a matter of time before it goes the other direction.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. I mean, it's like, so how long do we get? My fear. How long do we get? You know, so that's my fear is that what I have noticed in my short 40 something years of being on this earth is like, because of social media and the internet now, these swings are faster.
Fast.
Hella
They're
fast.
Big and fast.
Yeah. It used to be like decades you get a run. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're not. So enjoy this shit while it lasts because devil worshiping is on fucking next week.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you see like,
you get a week.
Kanye, you get a week, dude. Dog.
You see like Kanye getting all like freaking Nazi in there. Oh, it's like, what the
hell? Did you guys hear about what he said?
He's lost his mind.
No. Did you hear what he said?
He's saying crazy stuff.
Did you hear what he said?
I did. He's saying off the wall. Yeah, dude.
There was some.
But that's
like, talked about some sexual abuse stuff that happened when he was a kid.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, really?
Oh, look up Kanye West. Yeah, dude.
Who did he say did it? Did he say it was Diddy?
Another
diddler.
He had a cousin. I think it was a cousin. He had a cousin who used to make him do things to him.
Oh, wow.
Up until he was 14 or something like that.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
What's going on with Diddy right now? What is it? What is up with that? I don't follow all that stuff. So
I don't know where that's at. I think that, you know. I stopped looking at all this stuff anymore because Epstein's never coming out. You know, none of this like information, as much as they wanted to promise that we're going to get all this transparency. It's like, you start to understand there's so many like really powerful world leaders involved in this that it's like, they're just going to go ahead and.
Yeah. Well, whatever happened to that
big way back out of it,
whatever happened to that big stunt that happened where Trump had or whoever had all these conservative influencers come out and they had all the logs and they had all this secret information. We were like, and then we hear nothing. All a stunt.
Big PR stunt.
Nothing. Yeah. It looks like he was a part of a big, I guess, plan to blackmail people through his island.
Of course.
And there's so many people implicated that
it's, you know why?
They can't just
too many left and right.
I mean, that whole thing is
too many on each side that both teams are like, hey, let's just agree.
We'll just cover it.
We'll just
are you on the list?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Let's cover it.
Yeah. And just from, I don't know, I brought up Chaos and all from Tom O'Neill, that book. And it was so enlightening in terms of like what the strategies like the CIA already was implementing. And it's like they were using cultural figures and people to influence and capture them. And like they would give them like this get out of jail free pass. And so like, of course they were doing that with Diddy. Of course they were doing that with Epstein. It's because, you know, they get all this intel and they get it on like powerful people. And this is literally like the intelligence world. Like you think it's all clean and you know, they have like little spy cool stuff. They just use sex, dude. And then they use it against them. And that's been the oldest trick ever.
I think that it's a bit misguided to think that there's a good guy and a bad guy. I think it's a lot of gray.
A lot of green and a lot of, oh shit, we're the bad guy.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I thought we were the good guy.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Nobody told me that.
Hey, speaking of good guys.
Speaking of celebrities. Speaking of celebrities, Justin sent something the other day that I didn't know about that. Did you see that they signed, Viore signed Archie Manning?
Yeah.
So, okay, who is that? He's obviously related to
Peyton. Yeah, okay. It's his son.
Is he a badass?
Well,
like his dad?
I think it's his nephew.
Oh, it's not his son.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so yeah,
it's his son.
I had to look this up because I thought which kid is this?
Is he high school, college?
He's college.
He's college.
Texas. So he's already good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got that pedigree.
Why did I think it was his son? I totally thought it was his son.
I thought so too. I'm glad you clarified because
I was wrong.
Didn't you say they're opening a store in Palm Desert too?
They did. They opened it. When I went there, I was like, oh wow, because I hadn't heard about it, and it's right off of that strip, it was cool, dude. We got to walk down, and I didn't use my, like, hey, I promote you guys all the time, you know?
You sponsor me.
Yeah, sponsor me. But I was looking for some good Meta shorts, because, you know, it was hot out there, and those are my favorite. Yeah,
did you see they also, they, like, tripled the size of the Santana Row store?
Oh yeah, they moved it.
Mm-hmm.
They did.
Oh, like they took over that H&M, which is a two-story, huge one.
It's the most. It's so crazy. Never in my life has anybody ever said, "Hey, But now that whenever Viore, at least I don't know, not super often, but more often than ever in my life, it's like at least a few times, at least 4 to 5 times a year, somebody will come up to me and say, "Oh, you like?"
Well, I know you.
So
like
I think
I'm like what?
I think the most interesting thing for me about Viore is, and for the listeners for a long time, they know this, right? We were the first company to advertise with them, right? So well before
they're so famous now.
Well, so There used to be a time 8 years ago when I saw somebody wearing Vuori. There was a 50-50 shot. They were my
must
listener.
Be listening to us.
Yeah, I could. Especially if they were fit. If you were fit and you were wearing Vuori, yeah. I'd be like, you listen to Mind Pump. And then it was like, yes, yeah. Where they are so big now. I still have that where I'm like, I wonder if they listen. And now it's like, they probably don't, Adam. No. They probably don't listen to the podcast. No. There's way more people rocking Vuori. Yeah, so it's been wild to watch their growth and where they're at now. I mean, they're just dominant.
What's cool is all these, because like retail, it seems like it's back like full force, yeah. You know, because for a while there, it was pretty bleak. Everybody was going to the online. They started in the online, I'm pretty sure, right? And then kind of went to the stores. Yeah. So
their first store was Encinitas, right? That's where we went. Wasn't that one of their first stores?
That's a good question. I think that was their first. I
believe that's their number one.
That was we went to.
I believe that was the first one they launched.
I want to mention this because this is happening on the 19th. So we got to let people know ahead of time. We've never done this before, but we're going to do a 3-part bonus series of episodes. It's going to be Mind Pump, but it's for trainers. It's only for trainers. It's going to be dropped on Monday the 19th. Anybody can listen to it, but it is directed for trainers.
It's not replacing any regular episodes. No. In addition to.
It's a 3-part series. We're going to start with the successful trainer mindset. Part 2 is diet and exercise strategies that clients love that actually work. The third one is the most valuable assessment you could possibly do. And then we are going to do a webinar the following week on the 27th, teaching trainers how to sell training properly. And that's going to be 4 p.m. Pacific. That's trainerwebinar.com. You could sign up now.
Don't miss it.
But Monday the 19th, it's a 3-part series, all dropping at the same time for trainers.
Let's go.
And coaches only.
Let's go.
Probiotics have profound benefits. Digestion, skin health. They can help with your mood. They help you recover. Some studies show they make you stronger and have more endurance. I'm not making this up. The data is clear. So what's the best probiotic in the world? Seed, by far. It's the only probiotic company we work with. Go check them out. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump. Get 25% off. Back to the show.
First question is from Jackie Welsford. How many times in a year should I switch between cutting and bulking? Should the year be divided into quarters or should I change more frequently?
So this is kind of an individualized answer, but I will say for most people, if you're fit and healthy, okay, so obviously if you have a lot of weight to lose, well, you're going to be spending more time in a cut, in a proper cut, right? Appropriate cut than you would in a, let's say, reverse diet, which you could also loosely label as a bulk. But for most people, if you're fit and healthy, most of the time you'll spend in right around maintenance. You'll be mostly right around maintenance, which you're never really in maintenance. Okay?
You're typically toggling back and forth between a cut and a bulk.
Yeah, because you can't ever perfectly calculate maintenance. But you're going to eat right around there, and you're going to exercise and improve your performance. And you'll add calories when you need more energy and strength, and you'll cut them down, and you feel a little bit of digestive issues or some bloat or some inflammation. And you move back and forth based off of how you feel. But if you're fit and healthy, you can create seasons for yourself. The standard, traditional one would be like summer's a cut, yeah. Winter's a bulk. I like that for some people because especially the holidays, you go into the holidays with a bulk.
It's weird because it's like it seems so stereotypical, but you start to realize like how that lines up, and it's like it makes a lot of sense too. If you can get more calories in, you need to like consume vitamin D versus like you're not going to get a lot of it because it's cloudy and two, just the activity part, you're gonna be more active in the summer. So I don't know. It kind of makes sense.
I really like the idea of, okay, there's two types of people that are not, that don't fall in this category, right? So if you are a ectomorph, you really struggle with putting weight on and building muscle and bulking, then you're going to spend a big portion of your year probably bulking because it's difficult for you. And believe it or not, more often than not, you probably accidentally fall out of that. And so you're focused in that direction because you need to gain weight or want to gain weight. The other side is the person who needs to lose, like you said, a lot of weight. You got to lose 100 pounds, or even if it's 50 pounds, you have a long way to go. You're going to spend most of that year probably in a cut with these mini interrupted bulks or maintenance weeks. Then everybody else, if you're relatively healthy and fit, and that, I think you should do cuts and bulks way more frequently, like all the time. What it looks like is what Sal said.
You're kind of hovering around maintenance.
Yeah, you're kind of hovering around maintenance, but it's never maintenance. It's always a cut or a bulk, which means you have periods where you're bulking.
Just undulating.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what it looks like. I think people tend to make a mistake in aggressively bulking and aggressively cutting, and you don't need to. Mm-mm. You can easily hover around maintenance, and you're going to have these periods of time when you're in bulk and then when you're in a cut. And for the person that's in a healthy place, body fat, this is where they should spend their time, is kind of hovering around that.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I would give this advice.
For me personally, I judge it based off how I feel for the most part. Bulking for me is, well, I'm getting stronger. I'm pushing more weight. And then the cut typically happens when I start to notice my joint pain, my inflammation. I'm just not feeling as good. Okay, I need to reduce my food intake. So I'll start to cut it down a little bit. The truth is, if you have a healthy relationship with food and you're consistently exercising and you're listening to your body and you're eating, the stuff that you know is good, you're trying to hit your protein and you're sticking to whole natural foods, your body will naturally waver between cutting and bulking on its own. You'll find appetite will go up sometimes down a little bit. And that's kind of probably most of the way you should live for the most part.
Next question is from Jennifer Ashton Fit. For those who generally despise social media, how would you recommend using it effectively to grow your business? How do you find a good balance?
The advice I give to, we help a lot of trainers and coaches, right? We have over 1,000 trainers in our course, in our private forum, where we're constantly giving advice and helping along. And this is a common question. And I think I went about it all wrong when I first was introduced to social media and was trying to figure it out and was chasing the wrong things, like trying to go viral, trying to get lots of followers. I think that's a terrible strategy. Both not only for somebody who hates social media, but even for somebody who, say, likes it and wants to grow it. I think it's a terrible idea. I think a better strategy is service your current client base. So let's pretend you only have a handful of clients, but you train those handful of clients a couple times a week. And every time you train a client, whether it's in person or virtually, they ask you questions and they have challenges. They fall off the diet. They don't know how many grams of this to eat. They feel this pain when they work out. Everything I just said, that's a post. You know, every time a client asks you a question, that should be a mental note for yourself to go, oh, I should make a post about that. And then the way it looks is you're serving your current client. So now you've created this nice post that has some copy that basically breaks down, why your client, single them out, but let's say they're bothered on knee pain and they're bothered on knee pain because their IT is tight and it's pulling on it. And so you taught them how to foam roll and do some hip mobility before they work out, and it alleviated that. So teach that to the 5 people following you on Instagram, and don't care if thousands of people see it, because you're doing a solid for your people, but you'll also attract other people that helps. And that's how you grow it.
You know, what's great about that? It's literally what we experience even in the physical gym, because when you're training your clients, you're always getting observed, and people were constantly shopping you and you're not looking, but you're talking to your clients, you're engaging with your clients, you're teaching, you're educating, and people are listening and they're picking up on all this stuff. And so if you can do this and portray that and magnify that, then it's a better way to attract clients.
The
anyway.
Only people that, because here's what I think what happens with a lot of people who have a business is they look at social media based businesses and they look at them and say, okay, well, what are they doing? That's what I need to do. The only businesses that need to focus heavily on social media to reach lots of people and maybe get viral, which is good luck with that, are businesses that are 100% social media based. But most businesses are not. Most businesses, social media helps add value to their current business. And that's the way you need to look at it, is here's my business. How can I use social media to add value to my current business? And the way you do it, like what Adam said, is how can I create social media that adds value to my customers, my current customers? Let me do that. And through that process, your social media will become very valuable to your business. But if I have a business, let's say I have a brick and mortar business, and I'm like, I'm going to go viral on social media. Waste of time. You're wasting your time. That social media is going to bring you no value.
Yeah.
You're not going to go viral. Good luck with that. And if you do, that doesn't even mean much. Many people go viral and do nothing with it. It's not bringing you any value. You're spending a lot of time doing it. Instead, think, how can I add value to my current business with social media? And so what it looks like is, here's my customers, here's my clients. What content can I create that's going to help them? and just do that. That's all you got to do. And that automatically makes it valuable.
We talk in the course, there's a section in our course where and I share that, like how I used to, I was the young trainer who had no certs, no experience. Everybody was smarter, more experienced, but more fit than I was. Yet I had all the success. Well, part of that was I wasn't afraid, one, to admit I didn't know. And then when I didn't know, I'd instantly go look it up. As soon as I'd look it up and learn what it was, I'd turn around and I would teach my peers, the 12 other trainers that work with me. And then now I knew the information. And that was a huge strategy for growth for myself. The only difference, that was 20-something years ago. The only difference today that would look like is instead of me going and having to go tell 8 other trainers, I could tell it online. So I would just post it. And that would be my way of doing that. Every time I don't know something, I'm going to go look it up. I'm going to learn. When I learn about it, I'm going to share with my tiny little community because I'm not big and famous yet. I only have 10 people paying attention to me. Who cares? But I'm going to share with those 10 people this newfound knowledge that I just learned. And hopefully I can help them because it helped me. And I'm just going to keep doing that. Every day,
you've already made your business more valuable.
If you're in this field to be a good trainer, you want to be in this field long term, you definitely should probably be learning and picking up things almost on a daily basis, whether that or organically happening from the clients that you're teaching and helping, and then running into things that you got to troubleshoot and figure out, or actively going out and seeking newfound knowledge. Both those serve you as a great driver of Instagram content or social media content. Mm-hmm. And so don't overcomplicate it. Don't overthink it. Don't get caught up in the likes and follows and all the metrics that they try and sell you that are so important. Go service your people and then it'll grow from there.
Next question is from Abby AF. How do you know if you're overtraining? I'm a 40-year-old woman who lifts weights 4 days a week and does HIIT cardio 2 days a week.
So I could go through the list of symptoms of overtraining, right? So like sore joints, not progressing, fatigue, my sleep is disrupted, strong cravings, blah, blah, blah. But here's another easy test. Take your current volume, 4 days a week of strength training.
Cut it in half, see what happens.
Cut it in half. If you get stronger and more, and you get better performance, you're overtraining.
I mean, what an easy answer, right? Because the other stuff can be so subjective. Like, am I getting the great sleep or am I?
A lot of people fool themselves.
Do I have joint pain?
Yeah. By the way, you like extreme overtraining is obvious to people. I think people know when they're doing it. They're like, oh my God, I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, especially fitness fanatics, are in this kind of like, this is as much as I can tolerate and I can do it. And I think I'm okay because I do it and I complete my workouts and I keep going. And then you ask them questions like, are you getting stronger? Not really. Is your performance improving? Not really. Have you plateaued? Yeah, kind of. Maybe it's a diet thing. It's like, try this. Cut your volume in half. It won't hurt you. So for 2 weeks, strength train 2 days a week and do HIIT cardio 1 day a week. So cut everything in half. And if you notice improvements in energy and performance, you're overtraining.
It's almost like if you're asking this question, you could pretty much assume the majority of people probably are. Yeah.
Well, and the reason why this advice that Sal just gave is so good is because just the 40-year-old woman thing doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
It's all the other factors we don't know. We don't know what your personal life is. We don't know how many kids you have. We don't know what your work hours look like. We don't know how stressed you are.
We don't know your sleep.
We don't know your diet. And all those variables take, and that's why too, if anyone were to ever, by the way, you'd be a terrible trainer if the terrible trainer was like, oh no, that's fine. Well, it's like, well, I can't say that's fine because I don't know all those things. And in the context of all those things I just listed, let's say that they're not great in a lot of those things, then 4 days a week could absolutely be overtraining, mm-hmm. or it could be absolutely perfect and not, or maybe it's not enough. It's normally not enough with fitness people that are training 4 days a week or more and doing a HIIT cardio. It's normally teetering on the too much. So the advice Sal's giving is like such easy
test.
Yeah, it's easy test. It's like cut in half. You're not going to lose gains. Yeah. You're not going to get fat during that week. You're going to be fine.
Experiment.
And then the question you have to ask yourself is after those 2 weeks, do you feel better, look better, move better, stronger, sleep better? Mm-hmm. If all those things go up, then it's like, oh shit, I was overtraining.
There's your sign.
I'm going to go less. Go.
Next question is from Sammy Girl DC. Would it be fine to run MAPS Aesthetic 2 times in a row? I am completing my first time in 2 weeks. I focused on shoulders and triceps, but I want to do a cut for my 45th birthday coming up. And although I hate working glutes and legs, I want to work on other lagging body parts.
First off, bringing up a lagging body part in a cut is impossible. So if you want to bring up a lagging body part, you have to be in a surplus. You're not going to build anything in a cut. So that's number one. Number two, MAPS aesthetic is usually too much volume for most people, especially a woman who's 45. But for most people, it's just too much volume. So can you do it twice in a row? Yeah. You'll probably get better results by running another program like MAPS Anabolic or Muscle Mommy. Something with less, more appropriate volume will probably give you better results. And if you want to work on glutes, Muscle Mommy is glute heavy.
That's a great program.
That's a glute heavy program,
right,
for sure.
Or don't do a cut, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to run the one thing, so when people ask me about running MAPS aesthetic back to back, I'm very careful to say it's okay or to do that just because it is our highest volume program. It does neglect things like mobility and rotation and some other things, especially as we get older, as we get into our 30s, 40s, and 50s, that we want to make sure that we're doing. And so what might end up happening is you quickly tip over into overtraining, especially in a cut, especially older too. So all those things are not working in your benefit. If you want to develop glutes and legs, I would do a program like Muscle Mommy, and I would do it in at least a maintenance to a surplus and then do a cut afterwards. You'd be far better off doing it that way.
Perfect. Look, if you like Mind Pump, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
That feeling of owning your first Mercedes-Benz is hard to believe, but it's real. From the leather stitching to the iconic design, every element of a Mercedes lives up to its reputation. See for yourself at your local dealer. Offers are waiting.
Discover authentic Florida on Amelia Island and enjoy a classic kind of family getaway. Spend laid-back days collecting shells on pristine beaches, kayaking the tranquil waterways, and hiking or biking vibrant nature trails. And with more than 90 independent restaurants, this old pirate stomping ground has plenty of delicious treasures to uncover. A family getaway that's a breeze. It must be an island thing. Start planning at ameliaisland.com.